appreciate you making the call today. I am so looking forward to talking with you. One of the reasons why, it's like growing up, I used to listen to radio, which obviously I'm doing right now, working in it. But there was a radio station that was doing a comparison. Which band is the most American band? And they put you guys up against Van Halen. And what blew my mind was they actually had to put you guys up, and you guys won hands down.
Is that right?
Yeah. One of my favorite moments of listening to radio is knowing that Journey was the most American band of all time. I appreciate you making the call today, Jonathan, because I'm actually a fan. I'm a huge fan of yours, especially when I sat there and was looking through my catalog, because I have like every Journey album known to man in my basement. But I was sitting there going through all of, and I was sitting there looking at all the songs, and your keyboards, your piano starts almost every single top 10 or number one song that you and Journey have ever had. I mean, I was going through it. Don't Stop Believing. Yeah. Who's Crying Now? Open Arms, Separate Ways, Faithfully, Girl Can't Help It. Be Good to Yourself, Only the Young. Then I go to the Babies and Back on My Feet Again, by far one of my favorite songs of all time. And then I go through Bad English. I mean, your keyboards, your piano, is that intentional that you put the piano first, or is that how does that come to be with these bands? Do they just know Jonathan's the man?
Well, I don't know, Steve. My father was a huge supporter of mine, and he encouraged me to write songs as many as I could and often as I could, you know, and study them. He told me, you need to be a mechanic, John. Look under the hood. All the great songs have things that make them great, you know. So I studied the hits, you know, from the 50s and 60s and played them in nightclubs and, you know, made my way through college. And, you know, the thing that he kind of reminded me of is their signature. You write your signature on your song. Make it yours. Make people know it's you. It's your song. Even in my worship music that I'm writing now, you know, the piano's a prominent part. And it's just kind of been that way. You know, it's like I sign my name on the song I write, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and it worked out well.
Well, and I've heard a lot of your newer stuff, your Christian music. And it is about as iconic as anything in your career you've done. I mean, there is a definite signature of your music in your Christian career that is so unique. You know, when your piano, when your keyboards hit, you know exactly who's playing.
Yeah, I try to keep it that way. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I, you know, had a great sort of advice from Isaac Hayes. I met him, you know, when he was in the Shaft days.
Oh, yeah.
On a rooftop in Georgia at a party, and I got to get him in a corner and ask him, like, how in the world did you create this amazing sound, a Shaft, you know? And he told me, John, I haven't changed a thing. I've been doing this at Stax forever, you know? And you look back at his songwriting, and you go, wait a minute, he's right. He wrote all these amazing soul songs, you know? He was behind the scenes, and he finally, you know, broke out with something that really made him a star. And he said, I didn't change anything, you know, and that's been my sound. And I'm like, well, okay, cool. I'll stick to my sound then, you know.
Yeah.
And I think I'm probably writing the same song that I did back in 1983, because although I did write something for Journey that's coming up, kind of unique and different for Journey. And it starts with a piano.
and that explains what Journey is. I think you guys have had, you guys are a super group in and of itself. I mean, not just because your name is Journey, but I mean, you look at all the people like yourself who have been in other bands. You've had people from Ozzy's band, Steve Miller Band, Santana, David Lee Roth, Zappa. I mean, you had Ainsley Dunbar, and who hasn't that guy played with in the past?
Right.
But you put together all these influences. And the influences that you all bring from your lives, I mean, it's like Journey is this quintessential sound that I think is about as, well, to the point of the radio station, is about as Americana as it gets.
Yeah, oh, for sure. You know, I can remember as a teenager going to see JoJo Gunn, right?
Mm-hmm.
The lead singer had a grand piano, front and center stage, you know. I forget his name of the town, but wonderful performer. And when I saw that grand piano on stage, I said, I want that someday for me. I want to play a grand piano. And when I joined Journey, of course, I had this beautiful Steinway in the studio, and I told the manager, I need a piano on stage. And he looked at me like I was, you know, a Martian. I said, no, I'm going to go buy a 7-foot Yamaha piano, put it in a case, and I'm taking it on the road. You must be kidding me. I'm not kidding. His name was Herbie. And so I said, and I'm going to paint it red. And so nice. I did, you know. And it's probably the best thing I could have done because, you know, it was 35 years. It's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now.
Is it? Okay.
I donated the Yamaha because it kind of wore out, and I'm playing a Roland Digital now. It's a lovely, lovely replica of what you should be playing, and it's red.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but it was just kind of neat. And, then, of course, Elton John, I got to see him, believe it or not, as a troubadour when he did that crazy gig, you know, did that acrobatic thing on the piano, blew me away. I said, how is he doing that, you know? And that really kind of sealed the deal for me was his music. You know, when I heard your song, I just said, why didn't I write that, you know? That's me, you know. And
I hear influences, now that you say that, from that song, not to say you've taken anything, but I hear influences and things like Faithfully and Open Arms. I totally see where you would get an influence from something like that.
Yeah, no, totally. And then, you know, I was so taken back with, you know, Bacharach and Hal David and the amazing hits that they kept coming with, you know. And then you read the story and how frustrated they were the first 5 years of writing together. They couldn't get arrested, you know. And it just took some time to click, you know. And with Perry, it was interesting because we clicked right away. I got there to San Francisco to write with him. I was flattered they want me to write with him. And the first, I didn't know that was going to be part of the deal, but he dragged me into his house and, you know, and we shared all these stories together. And he said, John, you know what the juice is for me? It's being on the radio. I went, well, now we have that in common because, you know, when I had Midnight Rendezvous, which was crazy, I had a guitar on, you know, and that was my rock and roll hit back in 1979 was Midnight Rendezvous. No,
I love
piano.
That song. One of my favorites. That album, Union Jack's, hands down. So,
it was funny, and so he said that, and he said, "I love being on the radio, John. Can we write songs on to end up on the radio?" And I said, "I'm with you, Steve, all day long." And then he said, "Do you have any ballads? I want to sing a ballad." And I had this song I wrote for my first wedding, "Open Arms." It's not finished, Steve. I don't have any lyrics for the verses, but it goes like this, you know. And he lit up, you know, and that's when I knew the chemistry between him and the mutual admiration was pretty great, you know, and I knew that God had put me in Steve Perry's living room to write. And I felt like, thank you, Lord, I deserve this. I finally have the voice I need to complete the catalog. And, you know, when I got dropped at Warner Brothers in L.A., it was pretty tough on me.
Sure.
And my guitar player asked me, so what are you going to do now, John? You know, I said, I'm going to find a singer that's going to sing my songs, a great voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I end up with John Waite and then Steve Perry. And then I went on, you know, Michael Bolton. Come on. So many great singers. Jimmy Barnes. The work I did with Barnes and Freight Train Hard, Working Class Man, went number one in Australia. And it's still an anthem there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, song I wrote for my dad ends up being an anthem in Australia. Go figure, right? Which has a piano intro on it again.
Who'd have thunk that one, right?
I
got to give you credit, though, with Bad English. I loved seeing you guys perform. And you're the only person I have ever seen, and you made the keytar cool. As much as I love Jan Hammer, nobody could do it like you, man.
Thank you. Yeah, Neil put an end to that. He didn't want to see that anymore.
Now, you have your daughter was on The Voice.
That's right. She almost made it in Nashville. She begged us to take her to Nashville. She was 16. And she wrote, while she was in Nashville, about 90 songs.
Wow.
and they were brilliant songs, beautiful. Her voice was just great. But the timing of things weren't, it wasn't her time, you know, and then they kind of, you know, ruined her confidence there. The city is pretty brutal, you know. It's a 10-year town, baby.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she, so she, I said, let's get back to pop music, you know. And so she made this incredible album, never released it. She's got these amazing mixes. They're just sitting there. I said, you know what? If you're not going to put this out, I got to put it out someday because it's way too good, you know.
That's awesome.
But she's an incredible talent. She's still singing. She married Treb Lukather, Steve Lukather's son, you know.
Yeah.
And he's been very, very close with Steve Perry, which is so interesting that, you know, I live vicariously through what Treb tells me about Steve, you know, and I'm so interested. And he said, you know, Steve talks so highly of you, and I got to get you guys together someday over a cup of coffee. I got to do that, you know.
I was just going to ask, have you guys ever talked about that? I mean, he is like, he's like one of the, in my opinion, one of the top guitarists of all time. A lot of people don't give him the credit, but he is unbelievable.
Steve, yeah. No, and he's played on everybody's record, Michael Jackson, you name it. And you know what's funny? In the 70s, when I was trying to get my Warner Brothers record deal back, because they dropped me on Bearsville, he ended up playing on like 4 demos that I did.
Really?
At Studio 55. And Lee Sklar was playing bass from James Taylor. And, you know, he's a legend.
Oh, yeah.
This producer that was making my demos, they put this superstar band together, you know. And I got a taste of what the real cats played like, you know. They had this guy, Mike Baird, playing drums on my... And Mike Baird ended up being the drummer to take over for Steve Smith on the Raised on Radio tour.
So, I had no idea. That's cool.
And then God has a sense of humor and puts Toto on the road with us, because Billy Idol was scheduled to be our you know, our special guest. And Neil thought of Toto, and they went along with Toto. And it turns out Toto sells more tickets with Journey, you know.
Well,
our fans really come early to see their set. I mean, that's 150 million records between the two bands, over 25 top 40 hits between the two bands. So it's a night of very high caliber music, you know. And they have that, you know, that sort of Africa thing going on, and they're sort of jazz fusion, and they're just a fresh, special guest to have, you know, and they're just such nice guys.
I've seen both of your bands individually, and you guys put on very unique shows. And they mesh so well on this tour. When you guys came through Lincoln, I went and saw you guys, and I had seen both of you years prior, and I think you both bands sound better now. I mean, I'm not joking. It's like, you know, they say, like, hell, I've got kids, and you know, and I sit there and I'm like, I look back at my past and I'm like, going, those concerts were great, but you're not BSing it. You all are going out there and really doing it, and I don't think these younger bands get it. You know,
some do. You know, there's some very, very good bands, but you know, there are a handful of them, you know, that really play.
Well, Alice Cooper said it one time, and I thought it was really poignant. He said, "You got to have the songs. You can play music, but you got to have the songs."
And songs matter.
And that, at the end of the day, is huge. I mean, I look at your band, for example. You all have the songs, and you've been able to... This Journey has been able to survive so many changes over its lifetime because you have the songs. I mean, you've gone through, what, three, four lead singers in the entire history of the band?
Yeah, he's with us. Arnaud's 16 years celebrating. This is his 16th year, probably the longest tenure of any lead singer for the band.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, so he's been crushing it for us. And, you know, he's got his kids on the road with him this time. And he seems really content and happy. And we're really proud of everything he's done up to this point. And we see some years left. There's definitely still some gas in the tank. But we're very happy with Arnell. He's amazing.
You guys have put together and continue to put together. I mean, I've got all your albums, even the newer stuff that you put out too, because Journey is an iconic band from my life. you're kind of you're part of the soundtrack to my life. And and I'm being serious when I say this. I went through a very difficult time in my life, and music carried me through. And when I go through the list of songs that you all have done, the heavy stuff, the lighter stuff, I mean, it all comes rushing back whenever I hear it. I saw Sopranos. Now I got to ask about that one real quick. Sopranos. Okay. Don't Stop Believing.
Yeah.
Did you know that was going to be a TV show?
We actually did. Yeah, David Chase had sent our manager an email with a request. It was a year before they filmed that last year of episodes. And so a year before it aired, I was told that David Chase insisted on Don't Stop Believing. And all of the producers of the show were like raising their eyebrows. Are you sure you want to use Journey in the last episode? And he said, absolutely. It's going to be Don't Stop Believing. And so I thought, I'll just keep this a secret. I won't tell a soul, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that really turned out to be a lifeline, because our singer, Steve Ogieri, had gone down. He lost his voice.
Yeah, I remember that.
We had Jeff Scott Soto come in and try to – we just limped through that Def Leppard tour with him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously wasn't going to be the guy, but he helped us get through it. And then that happened, you know. So we hadn't found our nail yet, and it provided so much fire and interest in the band. For 2 months, you know, we were doing interviews all from Associated Press, you name it, Rolling Stone. They all wanted to talk about The Sopranos and why that song.
You know? Yeah.
And the thing about when you watch that scene and you hear the lyric, it really rings much more serious, you know, than when people just kind of flows over them, you know. They dismiss it, oh, it's a pop song, you know.
No, it's...
But when you get into the lyrics, you know, some were born to lose, some were born to sing the blues. Some will win, some will lose. Some were born to sing the blues. The movie never ends. It goes on and on, you know. And then here's Tony and his family sitting there. What's happening next, right? And then, of course, to fade to black at the end, it kind of redefines the song when you watch the scene, you know, because I never, well, as a writer of the song, I was moved, you know, by it. I thought, I get it, why David Chase wanted this song, you know. And it was very, I was really proud of the duality that song could have, a depth, add layers to it now that, you know, that people maybe just overlooked, you know, because it was crafted with a lot of love and care by Steve. And I wrote that lyric in an afternoon, believe it or not. This was crazy.
Wow.
And he, you know, was thanks to Neil's guitar interlude, but it sounded like a train on a track.
Yep.
I was able to get that midnight train going anywhere, and then we put the rest of the story about Sunset Boulevard, which I actually hung out in Friday night several times there, you know, when I wasn't working.
Sure.
And I said, Steve, this sounds like Sunset Boulevard. And he's like, okay, well, tell me about it, you know. So he's never been there, but I told him about the Friday night carnival every week, you know.
Sure.
And there was people with crews down the street. You had the Rainbow. You know, you had Van Halen at Gazzari's as a house band. You had Aerosmith at the Starwood, right?
Wow.
You had Elton John at the Troubadour. You had Rocky Horror Show at the Roxy. You had David Geffen opening this amazing new label. You had Casablanca Records down the street.
Mm-hmm.
All on Sunset Boulevard. You know, can't even look over where everybody made, you know, had dinner and made the deal.
Yep.
And so I'm on the outside looking in to the big show, you know, and I'm just dying to get into the big show, but it's not my time yet, you know, and I had to pay my dues and get some mud on me, you know.
Yeah.
I wrote with this guy, I wrote with Dylan one time, and he said, John, you're talented, but you need some mud on you. I said, okay. You need some mud. Just do squeaky clean. You're like, forget it. You know, you need to get kicked around a little. And boy, I did. I get kicked around, you know.
Sure.
And I had day jobs. I sold stereos. You know, I quit the clubs to detox from that scene. I didn't want anything to do with it anymore. You know, I said told my brother, you go on, do, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm writing songs. That's what my father told me to do, you know. And that's kind of what, so I sold cereals during the day and I wrote songs at night. And that served me well because the song I wrote while I was selling cereals got me in the babies.
Well, and you think about it, a lot of people take for granted, you know, that we from the outside look at these, look at bands of all kinds, including yours, and we're like, oh, must have been the overnight success. Nobody thinks about the hard knocks that you all went through in order to get there.
Yeah. No, even Steve Perry, I mean, he had a band called The Alien Project, and his partner, his bass player, was tragically killed in a car accident. Mm-hmm. And they were supposedly going to be signed, and it all blew up for him, you know, and he kept at it. He put a cassette in our manager's pot bag coming from San Joaquin Valley with his voice on it and some of the music they had written, and our manager, Herbie, heard it, called him, and said, I've got to get you with Neil Sean, you know.
Wow.
I've got to get you with Neil. And it wasn't an easy sell. I mean, they had this guy, Robert Fleischman, who wasn't cutting it for Herbie. Herbie wasn't buying it, but yet Robert wrote some really great songs on Infinity, you know.
Yeah.
His strength was definitely not the front man. He was more of a writer, you know.
Right.
So when Perry got a hold of his stuff, I mean, it just went to the next level, you know. When you hear Wheel in the Sky, what he did with it compared to what Robert sang, like two different songs, you know.
Sure.
When I heard Robert's version of it, I really understood the genius of Steve Perry, you know, what he could do in the studio. It was amazing. And then not only that, but he was an engineer. He played bass and drums, right? So he knew how all the pieces were supposed to fit.
Oh, yeah.
And when we rehearsed, you know, he would get Steve off the drums and said, no, try this, or the bass. He would try this, Ross, you know, and very, very driven, you know, back in those days, just, you know, and I hadn't realized how many gigs he had done with Journey before I had got there. They were playing 5 days a week, five nights a week.
Wow.
In a row, four in a row, five in a row. I'm like, oh, who does that, you know? But he did, you know, and his first gig at Journey wasn't a great one. They didn't know what to think of him, you know. So he kind of battled his way into the spotlight, and rightfully so. And then he was looking for a new direction, and I heard that voice, and I went, whoa, this is money. He could sing the phone book.
Yeah, you knew exactly what to do with that voice, yeah.
Yeah, we did, and in Open Arms was like our first experiment together of my melody and that soaring tenor, you know. And when I heard that, him sing Open Arms in his house, on my little Wurlitzer piano, I said, wait till the world hears this, you know. Wait till the world hears. And you know, then it was a monster hit. Never got to number one. I think it was up against Endless Love.
Oh, yeah. That was a tough time to get a number one song. Those songs stayed at the top of the charts forever. Yeah.
And we, but the album went number one because of the success of Who's Crying Now and Don't Stop Believing It. You know, we had four top 40. Yeah.
But the longevity of that song still is on the radio. I mean, Endless Love, I'm sure, gets played some places, but still Open Arms gets played all over. And it was in that cartoon movie, Heavy Metal. I remember watching that going, wow, you know, these guys are in this cult classic, you know?
And it's pretty cool. I mean, it never really got a good shot in the movie like it should have, I think. But, you know, Celine Dion ended up opening her show with it.
Wow.
And I got to see that once, and I'll tell you what it was. She was something.
I bet.
She sang over there, it was so cool. To open your show with a Journey song, you know. It's like Kid Rock coming on and Don't Stop Believing.
You know? Exactly. Hey, okay, I know you got to run, but I want to ask you one more question.
Sure.
When you first heard yourself on the radio, what did that feel like?
Validation. You know, you get that approval, right? It's like, yeah, that came from somewhere in my soul, somewhere in my heart, and I'm validated now and confident, and I deserve it, you know? I worked hard. I, you know, I got kicked around I got told I wasn't any good. I got told to get a day job, told I couldn't write songs, I couldn't sing, I couldn't this and that, and I didn't believe any of it. You know, I was just like single mindset. My father, you know, stood behind me through those tough years. He supported me, gave me money when I needed it, and told me, he said, there's something around the corner. God's got something for you, you know. So when you hear that validation, that approval, somebody actually loves my idea. I'm not the only one that is in love with this idea. They're playing it on the radio. That's pretty cool, you know. So it gives you juice to go forward, you know.
I love the fact that you embrace that, because not a lot of people embrace that. You said, I deserve it. And not enough people, everybody wants to be, well, no, I don't deserve it. And yeah, you do. And quite frankly, you do. It's a gift that God gave you. And quite frankly, you're sharing it with the world. And we deserve that too.
Yeah. It's a love affair. It's kind of like, you know, you work really hard to become a great man, and you find a great woman and you marry her, and you know, we've both come to that place of recognizing true love and lasting love, you know, and that's kind of the love affair with songwriting and music in general, that you care so much about the fans that you want to send them a postcard. You want to say, hey, it's John and Journey and Neil and Steve, and here's something we're thinking about, you might be thinking about, you know. And I always wrote for the fans, you know. When I joined Journey, I told them, I said, the only thing you're missing is you're not writing for your fans. And they're great. They're out there. They want you to sing to them. They want you to sing about their lives too, not just, you know, your own selves. And so that's when Escape, you know, we turned the spotlight out at them. And ironically, a song like Faithfully, which is very intimate, our fans come back with signs saying, we're forever yours, Faithfully, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, there's a twist, you know. So it is this love affair. And when you get publishing, when you get played, and when you get that massive amount of approval, you're connecting, you're communicating, you know. I was the editor of our high school paper, and as a journalist, I wanted to connect with the school and really bring the school together as one school spirit, you know.
Sure.
And it's the same thing, you know. You want to be a connector, and we have our little, you know, Journey service is kind of, you know, all the lights go up. They've got their cell phones on and the lighters, and, you know, there's this massive light in our concerts, and you think, my God, how blessed are we, you know, to be able to connect with these fans. That took a lot of work, and it was an army of people, like I said in my Rock and Roll Hall of Fame acceptance speech, that made Journey, you know, a household name. It was the radio, it was the label, it was the, you know, the distributors who got the records out, worked at Handelman and all those, you know, places where they used to ship product.
Yep.
We would stop and thank them, and the A&R department that worked so hard, you know, program directors that believed in the band. Yeah, all of that, you know, is kind of, it's not even hardly around anymore. These new bands, I feel bad for them, because there's so many talented ones that, you know, if they don't have a TikTok account with 1 million followers, they can't get a deal.
Oh, I know. It's crazy nowadays.
It's like, what happened to talent, you know? So people asked me the other day, would Journey make it in this day and age? And I say, you know what? It'd be a long shot. It would be definitely a long shot, you know?
You see, I don't agree. I think you would be right. I mean, just tear it up. I mean, you look at the library that you all have.
Yeah.
You can't deny the power of what you. I mean, I look at the we can see what songs are streaming all the time. The top songs. Don't Stop Believing is constantly in the top 50. I mean, of all 2,000 songs we get to look at, yours is in the top 50. Every single week. And that speaks to the power of the music that you've created. And I'm so thankful that you guys are still doing it. And I'm thankful that you made the time for me today.
It's been my pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Well, Jonathan, thank you for taking the time today. You guys will be playing in Omaha at CHI Health Center coming up on Monday the 15th with Toto. And Jonathan Kane, thank you so much for all the music that you've given us. God bless you, and God bless Journey and your solo career. Hope you have a lot more success, and we cannot wait for the new album for you guys.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Many blessings to you, and all love to our fans in Omaha. We'll see you there.